I think that there is a great deal that we can do when we're feeling overwhelmed and stressed to slow down, to simplify our lives. And that is, in fact, I think the main challenge we often face. Just like I think the number one missed opportunity for growth is we sit down and we just start working without pausing for a moment, slowing down and asking ourselves, how could I do this in a new and better way? How could this bring up my best?
Before we get started, if you enjoy these episodes, you might want to explore more at optimalwork.com. Our website offers unique content, tools, and exercises to help you thrive at work and beyond. We have an in-depth masterclass, which covers our entire theory of growth. We have daily recommendations for personalized advice, and we have a platform to help groups and organizations learn and practice optimal work together. You can get a free trial at optimalwork.com. Now let's get started with today's episode. Hey, this is Sharif, joined by Dr. Kevin Majors. Kevin, good to be here with you again.
Hey, Sharif, great to be back.
Kevin, so there's this very popular book now called The Power of Agency, which a lot of people are talking about, and I think actually some people in our circles have mentioned it to us. And so I thought it would be great for us to do an episode on this book, The Power of Agency, and compare, contrast it with our own approach. What do you think?
Sounds great.
So the book is based around seven core principles that will help a person develop agency. So I thought maybe, well, probably it's good to just start with agency. I think it's a pretty intuitive concept, and then go through those seven principles and see how they relate to our way of thinking. So first, I guess, is agency a common term in psychology? Is it something that everyone kind of knows and there's a stock definition for it, or is this their development?
I think this is the author's word. So the two authors actually were at one time both at Harvard Medical School as instructors or lecturers there. And they both, so it's Paul Napper and Anthony Rao, the two of them wrote this book. And Napper is more of a coach and Rao is more of a psychotherapist. Their idea of agency is the answer to being overwhelmed. So the typical situation is a person is overwhelmed because they have all these impossible things that they're trying to do at the same time. They're trying to succeed in their career and raise a family and have some kind of flourishing hobby. And there's all these things that are weighing on people that are making demands on them. So agency is how you construct your response to life so that you, in a sense, take charge of your response. So I think what they're most concerned about is how the moments when we're overwhelmed can lead us to be just working automatically, kind of not deliberating before we do things. So they're very big into deliberation and its many forms. But then they're also big into trying to adjust your life so that it overwhelms you less. So I think it's an interesting way of thinking about being overwhelmed that may be different than the way we think of it. But at the same time, anything that helps people to slow down and to think about how can I craft my own approach to the challenges I'm facing, I think is very close to what we try to do.
Yeah, it, as you described it, it reminded me of, I think at some point in the masterclass, you say that if you could boil down our approach to one thing, or if there's one element that makes a difference, it's about going from an external locus of challenge to an internal locus of challenge. So am I being passively challenged by things outside, or am I actively challenging myself? Now, one thing that seemed to be lacking was that when we help people to challenge themselves, it's typically according to ideals. So it's what's the pattern for my behavior, or what's the what do I most want my behaviors to be like, as opposed to, it sounds like here they're talking about when you take control or when you exercise agency, it's about crafting your situation and your circumstances, not so much your actions and living according to your ideals. Is that a fair distinction to draw?
Yeah, I think that it is like that is a big difference. But I would say that when people are overwhelmed, you could try to only focus on the externalities and try to change those. Or you can focus on the internal, like controlling what you can control, what's inside of you. So I think what the authors are trying to do is move people toward the internal. But it's true, though, that I don't think that the idea, the like, what exactly is the image of flourishing, which ideals are the answer to that, that they provide us with the image of flourishing in every challenge. That may not be in their formulation. So it's interesting to see how far can you help people to deal with being overwhelmed, to actually be in control of your life again, to be actively challenging yourself. How far can you do that without ideals? And maybe that's the way of approaching the power of agency. In many ways, it seems to me like it is part of a movement in positive psychology. So positive psychology was, the most famous name is Martin Seligman. So to think of his stuff on learned optimism, and he's the one who did the original studies on learned helplessness, which is like an idea that factors a lot into the book, The Power of Agency. Well, positive psychology, in a way, tried to look at all the virtues that they could think of, just list them out. And then let's start looking at these positive qualities in people. Well, in fact, there's some misgiving I have with positive psychology, because it typically is a way of how do you get all the benefits of being a person of faith without faith? That's in a sense the question of positive psychology. So then they come up with gratitude, okay, and confidence and fortitude and a great list of virtues, but they're kind of removed from their ordinary context, you know, and then just turned into these qualities that we try to encourage in people and then we study. In a way, what this work is doing is, in fact, moving more away from the content of the virtues and more to these psychological processes that are still, that would describe someone flourishing. Maybe it's good that we go through what those processes are just to fill it out for people. But the idea is that if you do these processes, there are general things you can do that will always let you flourish in the face of being overwhelmed, right? So the number one thing they talk about, the first of their points, is to limit stimuli. That if you're constantly being bombarded with messages and with noise and demands, that you have to find a way to set a perimeter around yourself. So when you go to work, to decrease the number of things vying for your attention at any moment. And they also talk about monotasking, the importance of doing one thing at a time. So as far as that goes, I think they're exactly something. This is what we talk about all the time in optimal work. You know, that two of the essential things of doing a golden hour, one is that you set a perimeter around yourself. And the other is that you have just the steps of one task that you're going to be working through. And that idea is really crucial to crafting anything that you're about to do. To craft it is just it's essentially to limit stimuli. So this is, as far as you can, this is the one thing I'm going to be attending to. So I think that's very positive. And goes a long way in helping people to be less overwhelmed. So to take any challenge you're facing, the new way we normally approach it in optimal work is, okay, when, you know, what are all the priorities that seem to be vying for the first place? Let's list those out. And then you choose the first one and you break it into a series of steps that you're going to use to go through it. Well, in a way, that's limiting stimuli. So there are fewer things vying for you. You put the first thing first, and now you work through it step by step. So I think as far as that goes, there's a lot of overlap between what they talk about in the book and what we talk about. So we can go through the other steps as well. I don't know if you have any questions on that before we do.
Before we continue, a brief message. If you're benefiting from these discussions, please hit like and subscribe to our channel. Doing so helps us reach more people. So you're not just learning yourself, you're helping others discover a path to growth and flourishing too. Thanks so much for your support. Enjoy the rest of the episode. Yeah, so control, so that, yeah, limit stimuli, control stimuli. Are we thinking I recently read that Sertolange, The Intellectual Life, and he talks about the need to kind of be focused in terms of your life goals and kind of what's important in your life. So is this looking at it from the macro level or the micro level or both?
Yeah, I think it would be both. That because there's a sense here of distinguishing what is important from what is urgent, making sure you are making time for what's important and working on it step by step. So, yeah, I think controlling stimuli in a way is how you, it's like set the stage in the beginning for any kind of flourishing. That if, as long as you're dissipated and distracted by and multitasking, you're not going to be able to deal with being overwhelmed. So at least as a gatekeeper, you have to deal with the stimuli and do what you can to limit it to not be overwhelmed. And I think that's a very good point.
Excellent. Yeah. So let's, that sounds good for the first principle. So the second one being associate selectively.
Well, I'm going to skip the second one. I'll just say the third one, which is move your body.
Okay.
Okay. Which I think is totally uncontroversial. You know, and that's where they go through the benefits of exercise and of movement in the course of work. And there are interesting things that there are, you know, evidence that in some types of learning, people do better when they're moving if they learn it. The Chinese study with people who are learning English, they had better recall if they were, I think it was cycling while they're doing the learning rather than just stationary. Now, they also are into... I guess yoga comes under this and other forms of movement, and they're very big into being immersed regularly in nature. As a side note, if you look at any of their YouTube stuff, you'll see that one of them has the most gorgeous office that has huge windows that go into, I don't know, some lush garden. It's like, wow, that's, I can tell what they're talking about when they talk about the importance of nature. And I think too, that it's a wonderful thing to get out for walks and to go as far as you can into nature. And so that's uncontroversial. But the now going back to the second one, and this is where I have a little more of an issue, is to socialize selectively. That just as you cut overstimulation out of your life and then you try to get more into nature and be moving, you also have to limit your exposure to negative people and as far as you can, cut them out of your life. So it's, and they say that that's the most important principle of all the ones they teach people, which I find a little bit disturbing. That their sense of age, they say that your agency, your ability to kind of craft your own response to the challenges you face is only as strong as the people you associate with. So I think that's what would make me pause about being able to recommend this approach wholeheartedly. That there's some way that bonds are not really understood. And I think it's because if you don't have a very clear picture of ideals, like the higher the ideals get, so you know, lower ideals are things like being punctual, being ordered, working intensely, you know, having constancy, but you go up and up and it starts being more thoughtful and caring and generous and humble. Well, the higher ideals are all about bonds. That in fact, you need bonds in your life to live those highest ideals. That in some way, the bond is the setting for the ideal. But I can't think of any situation in which the best response is, unless someone is like dangerous or abusive, where you really should be taking a tally of people in your life and then nixing the negatives. Almost always, the bonds we have are givens in our life, to some extent, like our family. Now, we do choose friends, but coworkers and family, you may or may not be able to completely choose who is closer to you. And the idea that you're going to be doing some kind of triage, and if anyone is negative, like say they complain a lot, or they criticize you, that you're just going to automatically cut them out. I can see how that could help people who are really overwhelmed to have a sense of like control in their life again. But bonds can't be controlled. And so that's where, if agency is primarily control, the control you exert over how you adapt yourself to life, then I can understand that bonds, just the reality of its richness, doesn't really factor in. And those are the three, what they call behavioral principles, which are the most important ones.
On this point of you only have as much agency as, I forget exactly how you put it, as the people you're connected with or something like that.
Insofar as they're not negative.
Okay. I mean, but isn't the whole point that agency is supposed to be something interior? So isn't there a little bit of a contradiction there?
Exactly. So I think what they're trying to do is they have a lens. So agency might be another word for control. And so they're trying to get people to control what they can control. But you can't control other people that you have bonds with. So anything you can do is essentially break the bond. So if there's someone in your life who is draining your energy, then break the bond. I think that can, I mean, to me, that, boy, I don't know if I would want someone who is close to me to be reading this book and thinking about, Kevin, is he on the whole negative or positive? And, you know, and how he makes me feel. It seems like there is a sense, but you're right. It's like it does seem to kind of violate their idea of, you know, of controlling what you can control.
Yeah. So we want to have this sense that, like, we're helping people. And if there's someone who's maybe not, like, lacking in some way, that we're not being harsh and judgmental and just cutting them out, but one of our the key things we want to help people with is helping other people to grow. And so it's about having that, like, kind of unconditional commitment to the bond, generally speaking. As you pointed out, there are going to be exceptions to that.
Especially because all the other principles that they have, which they call the cognitive principles, they come down to basically that you need to question your beliefs. And, you know, it's, but then what about your beliefs about other people? Shouldn't you be open to other people and curious? So I'll mention briefly, and I'm sorry, I feel like I'm jumping here, but just to give the four other principles, the number four is to keep learning. So that you just keep into a learning mindset. Five is to be grounded. I guess that in large part means being mindful, you know, of your emotions and beliefs. And then the next one is to check your intuition, which is to, like, consult it, but also to keep it in check so you don't believe everything that it tells you. And then the seventh one is to deliberate and then act. So I would say that all of those are great pieces of advice, and for individual people, they can help a lot. But applying that, you know, like, it means that you want to be staying open and curious and engaged with the challenges that you face. And they talk about those qualities. I think it'd be important to apply those to the people in your life too, to stay open, to stay curious, to stay engaged, rather than thinking that somehow you've summed up these people, you know, and then you pass judgment on whether they continue or not. They talk about this one couple that they worked with that had these, I guess, family members that they would visit from time to time, and they just found unbearable. And so they decided that when they were visiting these family members, they would pretend that these family members are characters in a Woody Allen movie. And no matter what they're saying or doing, these two people would just keep talking to each other. But I just saw problems with that, though. it seems to be like a fixed belief about other people, like as if other people are unable to change. And I think that in general, I'm very optimistic that people are generally trying to have bonds, and people want meaningful relationships with others, and that these bonds can bring out our best. So I tend to think that if a bond isn't bringing out our best, well, it's probably not going to bring out the other person's best. But the thing that we can do is ensure that it brings out our best. And then it'd be more likely to bring out the other person's best.
Yeah. Now, obviously it is important, especially I'm not sure how much their work is kind of geared to a professional context, but think about it from a professional perspective. It is important to, you know, kind of carefully, I don't know if select is the right word, but who you form these relationships with, people who are going to mentor you and help you to grow professionally. And then I think that applies to a large extent in life as well. So there is a sense that you want to, even if you're not maybe breaking the bonds with people that you deem, I don't know, unworthy or something like that, but you would agree that they're, that you want to be cultivating relationships with people who are very good influences on you and can really help you to grow and so forth.
Absolutely. Right? And they do say that one supportive relationship is enough, which is also encouraging. So they're not asking people to only have one relationship in life. So I think that, in fact, these authors are very balanced people. And the kind of advice they would tend to give is very balanced. But I do think that it just may be that because there's no focus on, from the inside, how does it look if you stretch yourself to live a particular ideal? I think that is the key question. Like, can you think in this moment, whatever challenge you're facing, how within that challenge there's a kind of call to live an ideal? Is there some way that you can, that this challenge can bring out your best and call forth some kind of beautiful reaction? And Aristotle's idea of the koan does mean beautiful. And it's the call to your mind before you do something. What is the most beautiful way of acting in this? So I think that there are suggestions of that kind of idea when you're thinking about how do you marshal your resources to best engage life. But I think maybe it just might be that in this, the authors are just showing what is commonly not seen in so much of psychology, which is the importance of ideals. That we need ideals to really be an optimist about every situation. I think every ideal can be lived in any hour of work, in any time with family. Everything, it's like we can learn to let these ideals bring out our best. And so I think that we can help people go a long way in not being overwhelmed by following the kind of prescriptions to be moving more and being deliberate before you act. But ultimately, there's a ceiling on that. If we don't also see then, what are the ideals that allow us to grow the most and to develop the deepest bonds?
Yeah, and I guess maybe just to fill out that picture, Kevin, one of the ways that I think about optimal work is, I mean, actually, this mission statement which came from you, helping people that challenge themselves in each hour of work according to their highest ideals. I think you can break that into three parts, is challenge, ideals, and then in the context of work. I think sometimes it's just helpful to see, okay, along each of those three dimensions, how does this apply? How does this figure in? So we just talked a little bit about ideals. I wonder if you could just kind of evaluate this work, the power of agency, in terms of
those
other...
Okay, let's go through them one by one.
Yeah, so starting with challenge, maybe.
Okay, so I guess on a scale of 0 to 10, how do these authors deal with challenge? Is that the question?
Yeah. And how much is it like helping us to challenge ourselves better, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I think that there is a great deal that we can do when we're feeling overwhelmed and stressed to slow down, to simplify our lives. And that is, in fact, I think the main challenge we often face. Just like I think the number one missed opportunity for growth is we sit down and we just start working without pausing for a moment, slowing down and asking ourselves, how could I do this in a new and better way? How could this bring up my best? So I think if people can learn to, and these authors are suggesting that you habitually learn to slow down and pause before you do things, to then think about the resources you want to bring to it. They might use slightly different words, but I think that they're on target when it comes to challenge and the importance of actively challenging yourself. Now, that's one thing that we don't see in them so clearly, and that's where I'll dock them a few points. I think of being overwhelmed as when, instead of actively challenging yourself in life, somehow the balance has shifted to now you are more being challenged passively by life. And then when people are overwhelmed is when they respond to that by thinking that there's too much challenge in their life, and then they challenge themselves even less and try to avoid. And that makes all of the challenges more and more external to them. So they end up being even more than where all the challenges are coming from outside of them. Well, I think what's most important then is to help people find small ways to actively challenge themselves again. And just bringing back the sense of active challenge can flip around feeling overwhelmed to where now people feel like, okay, now I'm back getting traction and making meaningful progress. So I think that there are elements of that here, but it could be drawn out a little more. Now, the second one, I guess, is ideals. And there I would have to say maybe being deliberate and curious are certain ideals that they're speaking towards, you know, but that would be on the lower side, you know, if, let's say a 3 out of 10. And then the last one is being in work. How do they help us at work? Yeah. Well, again, if you can actually get people to slow down and do the context of the book is heavy with examples from work. And it's clear that they have worked with a lot of people over the years to try to be testing out these theories, and that their message really resonates with people in business. I would have to give them a 9 for that. I think they're very good at showing you how your workday can change if you bring these principles into it. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so overall, it's a pretty good rating, and we're seeing that. I think the main thing that could be added is the focus on ideals, which I think makes sense given your comment before on, you know, their notion of bonds, and because ideals are all leading up to bonds, and that
exactly, you know. Yeah, and I think that I think that they have done a fantastic job trying to. Focus on things people can control as much as possible, which makes sense if you're talking about developing a sense of agency. They tried to be as research-based. I didn't mention, but they have an enormous wealth in their resources in their bibliography. So if you want to see, you know, like what are the this book is from 20, is it 19? So I think it's 4 years old now. But if you can see the state of the science too behind all these things, they have very good case examples. Although I would say that the first example in the book on Leslie and Paul being overwhelmed left me feeling totally overwhelmed. These poor people, all the things that they're trying to juggle, and it happens a few times. They have these very vivid case examples that I think really resonate with people who read it. So, yeah, in so many ways, I appreciate what they've done and. How they put this out there to help people find ways of challenging themselves in work. And so I think for that, I'm very grateful for their work.
Wonderful, Kevin. Well, thank you very much for that insightful review.
All right, Sharif, thank you for the questions.
All right, we'll be back next week. Thanks for tuning in to today's episode. If you enjoyed our conversation and you're looking for more in-depth guidance, check out optimalwork.com. Our platform of content, tools, and exercises that will help you thrive at work and beyond. See you next week.